Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In a presidential primary year, it's always time to talk, or I should say a presidential election year, it's always time to talk politics. And there's still plenty to keep state lawmakers busy this year as well. So joining us to talk about all of that is Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Welcome back, Karen.
Oh, glad to be here.
And also with us, veteran Statehouse reporter Bill Hershey. Bill, welcome back, Bill.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Let's get to those national politics because you have news. I mean, tell us what's going on. We know, first of all, that Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum were in a dead heat in Iowa yesterday.
Eight votes.
Oh, my Lord.
That's what the reporting was this morning.
Romney's the winner.
Yeah, by 8 votes. So it was incredibly close.
Ron Paul in third, not too far behind, with,
and then
at 21%.
Gingrich in fourth.
Gingrich, 13% or something like that. And then fourth, well, was it Perry or?
Gingrich was fourth, Gingrich then Perry, fourth. Okay. And then Bachman, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And so right now, Michelle Bachman is preparing to speak to reporters, and sources are saying that she is going to suspend her campaign, and Rick Perry is supposedly also considering doing the same. They've canceled their trips to South Carolina, which was going to be one of the next stops coming up. So it looks like they are done, even though it's interesting. Nobody quits the race anymore. Everybody just suspends their campaign. So that's what's happening right now.
What's the deal? Because Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum were probably going to come out ahead, if not in this dead heat. What would have changed? Nothing much was going to change as far as their lineup. What is it about having this tie at the top that changes things, or is that not what it is?
I think it changes things. It projects Rick Santorum all of a sudden as anti-Romney. Now, Newt Gingrich would probably take offense if you said that, and he is already up in New Hampshire casting himself as the anti-Romney, and from what I read and heard, Gingrich Super PAC, I think, is already doing vicious anti-Romney ads up there. This former speaker said he wouldn't engage in any negative campaigns, but then he said he reserved the right to tell the truth. And I guess the truth is going to make Mitt Romney look bad. But it looks like we have two anti-Romney people up there now, Santorum and Gingrich, but it's right in Romney's old backyard, and I would think that he would do well in New Hampshire, although the newspaper up there, they have endorsed Newt Gingrich. So we'll have a week of a free-for-all fighting among those three up in New Hampshire.
Possibly Gingrich will do better in New Hampshire than Santorum. Well, according to entrance polls yesterday, I guess I got this from the Washington Post, Rick Santorum took 32% of born-again Christians, but just 14% of everyone else, while Romney took just 14% of born-agains and 38% of everyone else.
And I think when you get to New Hampshire, that born-again religious factor starts to drop off a little bit.
Exactly.
And so that may hurt Rick Santorum, as you're saying, because he certainly is. It's a anti-abortion candidate, anti-gay rights, this sort of thing. And so I think then you've got a little bit of a different race developing there. But I think this idea of Gingrich being the anti-Romney, I think he wanted to be in Iowa and just didn't have the ground game there that Rick Santorum had built up. And so now you're getting into New Hampshire where Gingrich feels a little bit more comfortable, and you're going to start seeing him do what he says Romney has done to him. Romney's super PAC was running all these anti-Gingrich ads in Iowa, and apparently Mr. Gingrich is a little irritated at that. So it's going to be a little rough and tumble, I think, for the next couple of weeks anyway.
And let's not forget that after New Hampshire comes South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Right. And as Karen said, New Hampshire is not a state known for its conservative evangelical Christians, but South Carolina is the sunny South where the evangelicals will have a big impact, and former Speaker Gingrich wants to wade in there. But if Santorum's still viable, that's going to force him to divide that support there, and Romney keeps perking along. I think New Hampshire was really a breakthrough for Romney because, if you remember, 4 years ago, he spent lots of money up there and got humbled by Mike Huckabee. This time, he kind of waited until the last week or so to come into Iowa when it looked like he had a chance. We had Herman Cain fall, Newt Gingrich fall, Rick Perry fall, Michelle Bachman fall, and all of a sudden, Romney won. As Karen said, just 8 votes, But a win is a win, and perception means everything.
And NPR has been kind of documenting this all along, that, you know, while you had these spikes, Herman Cain and Rick Perry and so on, Romney just had this kind of steady
stream. He's the tortoise.
Yeah, he's just right along the line.
Right.
And when everybody else falls out, who's left? And so, you know, I mean, I think everybody has been predicting that Mitt Romney is going to be the nominee. And I just wonder who's going to be still left really in this by the time we get to March 6th, Super Tuesday, when Ohio is among the states that are going to be having a presidential primary.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about national politics right now. We're going to get to state politics and state public affairs in a little while. My guest, Bill Hershey, a veteran State House reporter, and also Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. You have a question or comment? We welcome them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, yeah, Ohio. Will Ohio matter even 2 months from now?
That's the eternal quest. Ohio always wants to matter. Sometimes Ohio becomes a punctuation mark where a candidate can say that he, and it's always been a he so far, won Ohio, so he captured the nomination. But if we remember 4 years ago, a victory in Ohio by Hillary Clinton kind of kept her campaign alive. So it's conceivable that Ohio will matter, but we're on March 6th. I think there's 11 other states that day that have either caucuses or primaries. So that could be the day the nomination is wrapped up by somebody. I don't know that Ohio will be the center of the political universe like Iowa is and like New Hampshire will be next week.
But it's interesting when you look back at 2008, Iowa picked Barack Obama and Mike Huckabee. And then when the race got to Ohio, as Bill was just saying, Ohioans picked Hillary Clinton and John McCain. So, you know, the people we're talking about right now might not be the people who are really at the top of the heap when it comes to March 6th and certainly after that. And I'm interested to see the next polling, because the last polling from Quinnipiac on this was back in October when Herman Cain
was
destroying.
Which is a thousand years ago.
I know.
Yeah.
Herman Cain was destroying the group. In a sense, because he had 28% to Romney's 23%, and everybody else was down in single digits. And so where is all that support for Herman Cain going to go? And then you've got, you know, Rick Perry, where's his support going to go in Ohio? And so I'm interested to see the next polling here.
Jim on Twitter asks, isn't Santorum not on the ballot in Ohio? I thought he didn't go on the ballot here.
I don't know.
We can check that.
I think they still have some time to file, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe not.
Well, there was a new filing deadline.
Well, that's
right.
What I'm thinking.
That's
and
right.
I remember
thought
when
that
it is.
Santorum did make it, but he might not have. We should probably check that. I think we're all kind of trying to catch up with Santorum.
Santorum, he's been around a long time. This is something he's been angling for almost 20 years. I mean, he's tried to make himself nationally known.
He has, and he has an interesting history. I believe he won election to Congress, U.S. House, by defeating a Democrat, and he won election to the U.S. Senate by defeating a Democrat, but he was also defeated in the U.S. Senate. So he's not unblemished, and I think that... you know, he's been around, and he's won elections, though, in these kind of blue-collar, working-class areas. I think he has some appeal to voters like that, although he is strongly evangelical Christian.
Has he been – have his views on those issues related, those kinds of issues evolved over time, changed?
I don't think
okay.
so.
No.
So
he's,
I think he's been
steady
he's been
Eddie
pretty,
when it comes to
his.
He's
yeah.
been a target for a lot of liberal groups and, you know, some people who have been really opposed to his positions on gay rights and gay marriage. And certainly he's very anti-abortion. And so I think he's always been that candidate. And, you know, for some people who want to see that, that's exactly what they want. And I think that's one reason why he did play well in Iowa, because there are a fair number, and I'm not saying they're the majority, but a fair number of born-again evangelical Christians there. And so that's going to be something that's going to continually follow him as we, you know, even Quinnipiac breaks down the way that born-again evangelical Christians cast their ballots. And so it's definitely a group that does move some numbers.
I think that the data that you mentioned, Ann, in terms of the percentage of evangelicals who voted for Romney as opposed to Santorum, we're going to see a couple things going forward, whether Romney can pick up some of this support that went to people like Herman Cain, or whether he's going to be stuck at the 25-26% that he was in the Quinnipiac poll that Karen cited. If you talk to evangelicals, social conservatives in Ohio, they don't like Mitt Romney. They think he's a flip-flopper, and you would probably have to drag some of them by the collar to the polls to get them to vote for him.
If he was the one on the ballot in the end.
If he were the nominee. Mm-hmm. However, the desire to beat President Obama is so great that that could help Romney if he is the nominee.
Another thing that could help Romney is who he might end up with as his running mate. And, you know, a lot of people are discussing the idea of maybe Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, and thinking that would be some sort of a dream team amongst people who are
very East Coast-ish,
yes,
though.
Yes, definitely. But, you know, there are some folks who consider Chris Christie as one of these rising stars in the Republican Party, and people who are wishing that he would have joined the race, along with Jeb Bush and some of these other folks. And so who Romney might tip off as being his running mate could potentially move him one way or the other.
We have it from Mike Thompson that Santorum has filed to be on the Ohio primary ballot. We know that all major candidates have filed. None have been certified yet. So that's the difference. And Chris from Youngstown, I'll let you ask the question that I was just going to ask. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I was just wondering what you think about Ron Paul. And I personally think that Santorum took a lot of votes off of Ron Paul for this first primary, and I think he would have won it despite that.
So Ron Paul came in third at 21%. That's not shabby.
Right.
What about Ron Paul, or does that all fall off?
Well, I'm not sure that it falls off. Ron Paul has a devoted following across the country, and for a while last night he was projected in a tie with Santorum and Romney. I think, though, if you come to a state like Ohio, Ron Paul's position on foreign policy is out of step with not just Republicans, but Democrats. I heard it referred to this morning on one broadcast as a isolationist. That might be too strong, but I'm not sure that Representative Paul has the ability to go beyond that core of supporters that he has. But it's interesting, all the support he gets from younger voters, which the other candidates aren't getting.
And also, I mean, he won the straw poll, wasn't it, Ron Paul, that won the straw poll in Ohio,
yes, he did.
Yeah. I mean, for what it was worth.
Right. And, you know, Santorum in the Quinnipiac poll in October, and again, years ago, practically, October was, Santorum only got 1% in the Quinnipiac poll. And Ron Paul had 8%, so that suggests that at least at that point in time, Ron Paul had more support than Rick Santorum in Ohio. But I think they are attracting different kinds of voters. I think Ron Paul kind of draws all across the spectrum. He does draw younger voters. He doesn't typically draw older voters, which is interesting. And so where Ron Paul lands in Ohio could be really interesting.
And, you know, the whole younger voter thing, if Ron Paul, and by the way, Chris, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. Ron Paul, as you mentioned, tends to attract younger voters, many of whom they're saying were Obama supporters. So Ron Paul, if he falls off and doesn't make it as nominee, where do those voters go?
Well,
where do those guys go?
There's speculation that Ron Paul could run separately. He's a libertarian more than he is a Republican. That's just Republican seems to be the handiest place for him to go.
And then split things up.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of people that I hear who are frustrated with the process want to see, not necessarily Ron Paul doing it, but somebody coming in and being another third party, like we saw Ross Perot back in 1992.
Ralph Nader.
Right. But I mean, on a big scale. Mm-hmm. And you've got some frustration out there among some people who are not social conservatives, but who are fiscal conservatives. You've got some folks who are very frustrated with Barack Obama, with some of the things that he's done. You've got frustration all the way around. And what would a third party, a really well-funded, energized third-party candidate do would be really interesting.
But a lot of people thought that was Ross Perot back in the day.
And you know, and when you look at Ohio back in 1992, it is interesting that Ross Perot, you know, he got 20% of the vote in Ohio, which is...
And you can say, if you don't have to be a Republican to say that without Ross Perot, George H.W. Bush might have won Ohio. So.
Yeah. Oh, and easily. I mean, Clinton had 40% in Ohio in 92. Bush had 38%. So without Ross Perot, it would have been different. And so, you know, the third party spoiler candidate, so to speak, you know, what could that potentially do? And, you know, I don't know. It would be fun to watch. Let's just put it that way.
We're going to take a break. Bill Hershey, Kieran Kassler are still with us. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment, we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Weekday mornings, prepare for the day with NPR's Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne and hear local news updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team. Listen to Morning Edition weekdays from 5 until 9 a.m. on 89.7 NPR News.
27 degrees in downtown Columbus with mostly cloudy skies. We could see a little bit of sunshine peeking through the clouds today. And if we do, a high of 34 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 26. Mostly sunny for Thursday. And even warmer with a high of 41. Looking ahead to Friday, sunshine and a high of 50 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from Marburn Academy, hosting the nationally recognized CHAD ADHD parent training classes beginning January 11th at 7 p.m. Registration information online at marburnacademy.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're still going to stick with some national politics right now with Kieran Kassler. She's bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Bill Hershey, veteran State House reporter. If you have a question or comment for them, again, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't wait till the last minute. You know how that gets. Let's move on to Obama. He was in Iowa. Some people kind of whined about that, and it's like, well, you know.
He wasn't there personally. He was there by video link.
Right.
Because there were only like 25,000 Democrats who caucused. But it was an exercise to show, you had to kind of practice the ground game, get voters interested, and kind of get things going to show that Democrats still are interested in what's
going on. Well, again,
for
the same reason anybody pays attention to Iowa, it's the first one.
Right.
So you
got to
be there.
And that's where he got his start
four years ago.
I mean, he did shellacked then Senator Clinton up there, and he invoked all that in his comments in that video conference that Karen mentioned.
He will be in Ohio many times before next November, but most certainly today. In Cleveland. What's the scoop? It has something to do with Richard Cordray. Maybe?
Well, apparently he's going to go around Congress, so to speak, and do recess appointment of Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Agency that was set up with Dodd-Frank.
And he's been waiting around for about a year for that, hasn't he?
Well, he first proposed Elizabeth Warren.
That's right.
And that didn't go anywhere. Then he proposed Richard Cordray. The problem is the Republicans don't want anybody in that role. It's not Richard Cordray. And they've even said when Cordray testified during hearings on this, they said, you know, it's not you. It's we don't like this agency. We don't like this position that we could potentially be appointing you to. And so this is, I guess, President Obama's way of going around all that and putting Richard Cordray in. And people who like the office and like the idea love this because they feel like this is something that will demonstrate that, you know, regulation is going to happen and Wall Street isn't running the whole show and that
sort
of thing.
And this recess appointments happened in the Bush administration. It's very common. Okay, because there hasn't been this sort of opposition. It seems like it's happening more frequently in the last 4 to 8 years. But
well, and I think you get recess appointments on judges and these sorts of judicial positions from folks who have trouble getting through committees because, you know, during election years, there's an awful lot of partisanship going on both sides. And so, you know, sometimes these things are done to get around that.
Well, it's bad enough in off election years these days. So, I mean,
is there an off election year?
Good point. I haven't seen
one for a while.
This is kind of a karma moment for Obama. He gets to come to Ohio, which is a battleground state. And I think this is supposed to be an official visit, a not political visit, which that defies semantics. But he gets to talk about Richard Cordray, who's sort of the Boy Scout of politics above the fray. Even the Republicans say he's competent. Senator Portman said he likes Cordray. Attorney General Mike DeWine, who beat Cordray, has even said positive things about Cordray. But they, as Karen said, they say they don't like the agency and the unfettered power that it would have.
And so, I think there's the possibility of challenges on constitutionality grounds about this office in general. But this is a huge win for Richard Cordray in Ohio, where he wants to come back and probably run for governor in a couple of years. This happens here, and it's a huge win for him, at least today.
And just because Cordray hasn't been appointed yet or hasn't taken office or taken that job yet, there's been an interim there. The agency's
yes.
been running. It's just they're waiting for that big leader to step
yes.
up.
Oh, he's been there doing the job.
Right. Tyler in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Tyler.
I just want to make a comment on the you were talking earlier about a third party candidate.
Right.
And we act so surprised when we hear about somebody running possibly third party, but I think we need a third party. And we need a fourth and a fifth party, because there's really no big difference between a Democrat and a Republican as of right now, other than the insults that they throw at each other.
Well, we were just talking about it. You think Ron Paul's the man to do it this time around, or?
I think if we had, I don't know, on the third party,
mm-hmm.
but if we had more of a setup like the UK does, say we had four or five potential candidates, Ron Paul would be the man to do it. His supporters are... They're not going anywhere.
You mean with a shorter election cycle, that kind of setup, or?
Yeah, shorter election cycle and more candidates running for the position.
Okay. Well, we don't have a parliamentary system.
Right.
That's the big difference here. And you hear the argument that the caller made, that there isn't much difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And a case can be made for that in terms of where their contributions come from. I think as you see the campaign proceed, though, you're going to see the candidates try to draw stark differences between the two parties. Governor Romney is already talking like the United States is headed down the path to financial ruin. And President Obama talks as though if Romney becomes president, the rich will just get richer, the poor will get poorer, and we'll have soup lines all over the country. So they're going to try to project big differences between the two parties.
Thanks, Tyler, for the call.
Thanks.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Is that me?
That's you, Steve.
Okay. Well, I didn't hear you say Steve.
That's
anyway,
cool.
Negative advertising. You haven't discussed that yet.
Do we? Isn't it a little, well, okay. Negative. It's always with us.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is that they always, or people who use negative advertising, they will make the statement, the voters are too smart to fall for the negative advertising, blah, 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 blah. And then they'll go ahead and put negative advertising on. Nothing has shown the effectiveness of negative advertising as the dramatic drop in Newt Gingrich's poll rating and the dramatic rise in Mitt Romney's poll ratings in Iowa. And even though Mitt Romney, smart guy that he is, kept his fingerprint off of the negative advertising, he just had surrogates do it for him, or they did it for him. He can't have them do that. I understand. That's a lot.
Right.
Could you discuss why people will even bother to say that negative advertising does not work?
Karen Kessler?
I think a lot of people are very frustrated when they see negative advertising, but clearly it works. I mean, I can remember watching a discussion after one election with Chris Redfern and Kevin DeWine, the chairs of the Ohio Democratic and Republican Party, saying, you know, we'd basically send fruit baskets to every voter if we thought that would work. That's why we do robocalls. That's why we do negative advertising, because it's been shown to work. And yeah, Mitt Romney didn't technically do the advertising because it was a super PAC that supports him. And so at the end of the ad, when it says, I'm Mitt Romney and I approve this message, that's a Mitt Romney ad. But if it doesn't say that, it's not a Mitt Romney ad. And so these ads that were coming out against Gingrich were not from Mitt Romney, but they still had the effect of promoting him and tearing down Gingrich. And, you know, these things work. and people do pay attention to them. That's why you keep seeing them until they actually are shown to not bring in voters and not turn out the candidates that, you know, do them. Then you're going to see negative ads. It's a reality, I think.
If you don't think they work, you should ask Senator Kerry, who was transformed from a war hero into kind of a war buffoon almost in the 2004 by the Swift vote. And that's the most extreme example that I can think of in the last decade or so of this kind of advertising.
I'd take the fruit baskets.
Well, one other thing that I think that is pretty obvious, from 2008 when McCain and his surrogate just hammered on Romney and with negative advertising, Romney learned a lesson, and his surrogates learned a lesson. None of this Mr. Nice Guy crap.
Well, and Gingrich actually called him out, apparently, yesterday, was saying that only one person in this race had really run a positive campaign, which I think he was referring to Rick Santorum, and that he wished he could say the same for others in the campaign, and I think he was really targeting that at Romney. Even though, once again, Romney didn't put together these super PAC ads. In fact, he's prohibited from communicating with those who are putting together these ads. But certainly, you know, they're doing it in favor of Romney, so to speak. And so, you know, but this it obviously worked because he did much better than Gingrich, and you know, at least that's the correlation that you could make, that it worked.
Thank you, Steve, for that call.
Okay.
Take care. Just a little bit of news. Michelle Bachmann has dropped out officially.
She's gone, huh? Yep,
suspended her campaign or
it's
dropped
all
out?
Over. That's a good question. Semantics, I don't know. I'm just told that she's dropped out. But
and I hate to confess to this, but I'm sitting here watching Twitter as we're talking. And one of my friends tweeted that it says something interesting about Michelle Bachmann, that at the start of her news conference, she said, "My name is Michelle Bachmann." I mean, if you don't know that already, then your campaign is really in trouble, you know?
Yeah, I probably didn't make it to the nightly news that line, so...
One of the our memories or in politics often are short, and it's interesting now for those of us who remember Newt Gingrich in the 1990s and even before, that he's casting himself as the candidate of a positive message, because he was very much the insurgent when he came to power, and anyone in his path was liable to get kicked, elbowed, kneed.
But isn't that his more of his nature to be like that, and that this positive stuff is...
I think this is a new Newt Gingrich.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's been trying to portray himself as a different guy than the guy he was in the 90s, you know, because he's getting a lot of flack for his personal baggage that was happening back in that time. And I think he is trying to cast himself as, I've changed. I'm now happily married grandfather. I play differently now. And so... You know, unfortunately, whenever anybody wants to play negative, they go back to the old Gingrich and these sorts of things that Bill's referring to. And I don't think he likes that a whole lot.
CNN says suspends. Washington Post says drop out. And the Huffington Post says suspends.
I think suspend is probably a legally technical word, because it allows the candidates to keep raising money. I think some of them owe money, have debts, so they can keep... plotting on, and they're not officially out of the race.
So what does someone like Michelle Bachmann do at this point? She suspended it. She's going to keep raising money, probably for the reasons that you just said. But does she have any weight to bring to anybody else?
I mean, certainly she's got people who backed her that, you know, if at some point she would say, I endorse this candidate and I'd like my supporters to do the same, you know, there's that. But I think that's one of the questions we've been asking about her and Cain. What did Herman Cain... What was he going to do after he suspended his campaign? And, you know, was he just angling for a book deal or a TV show or something? And so, you know, I think suspending your campaign keeps you, quote, relevant, keeps you at least being discussed. But, you know, it doesn't really give you any sort of a power in this race anymore, because you're not actively campaigning. You're not out there.
And she won the Iowa straw poll, I think. And now she is in the single digits. And she's from Iowa, so this was among the most dramatic falls of any candidate there. And I don't know if it's too late for her to run for Congress another term. Do you know, Karen?
I don't know. And I know in some states you have that spoiler rule, like in Ohio. You can't run for president and run for Congress at the same time, which is one reason why Dennis Kucinich had not been on the Ohio ballot as president for many years because he was running for his own seat in Congress. So I'm not sure what her situation is, whether she could file for both in Minnesota or what.
Speaking of Iowa, Terry on Facebook writes, Iowa is a tale of two states. As conservative as people might think the state is, remember they have marriage equality, but that's a tenuous.
Yeah, and they actually voted for Obama. I mean, there are this idea that it's only, you know, white evangelical farmers is not true. I mean, that's a big portion of the state, but it's not the only thing. And that is interesting that they do, like you said, have marriage equality there, which a lot of states have not even touched or have even gone the other way. Like Ohio has said marriage is between one man and one woman. So
we have to shift to state issues, in particular Governor John Kasich and what he plans on for the next 12 months or so. A year on press conference was interesting. About an hour and a half long of him talking.
2 hours. Well, yeah.
Well, I actually was going to say it felt...
Yeah, I think.
But then he let reporters ask questions. Now, traditionally, governors have private sit-downs with the different news organizations. This didn't happen this year. He did this group thing at the mansion, right?
It was the most bizarre year-end press event by a governor that I can remember. And I go back to Governor Rhodes, who used to throw popcorn balls to you. And it was a lot of fun, although he never answered questions. He pretended that he did. Governor Kasich gave an hour and 25-minute recitation of all the things that he said he had done, and he has done a lot of things. But there were no questions for an hour and 25 minutes, and I think afterwards there was about half hour's worth of questions.
At most, and a lot of appearances by his cabinet where he told him to stand up and sit down and kind of shut up and what do you think?
And there was a video from... business people who said Governor Kasich could walk across the Olentangy River if he needed to, and it was all, and that's just the way he did it. It was different.
And it reminded me a lot of when the governor introduced his budget. He introduced his budget to us, which is typical, and did the same thing with the cabinet.
To the media.
Standing up. And I remember it being unique in that there were protesters outside the office in the Reif Tower where he was introducing the budget, which I'd never seen before. And then that evening, he had a town hall meeting where you could get a ticket from his office and come to the Reif Center at the Capitol Theater. And once again, it was the same kind of thing where, here's what the prisons department's going to do. Gary Moore, stand up and say a few words. And so that was the feel of a lot of this year-end news conference. And you're right. I mean, ever since I got here in 2004, and I have
it
been
goes
in Ohio
beyond, right?
Yeah, for even longer ago than that, we've always had the governor sit down at the end of the year
and
do
an
interview.
The idea was, you know, my experience of it back in the early 90s on Forward was that gives you a chance to operate, you know, to use some enterprise. So what are you going to get out of that interview with the governor as a news organization? And it was, as an individual news group, you could maybe mine for some stuff that another one might not be prepared for.
Or local stories.
Local stories, right?
Yeah, we all have our audiences that we serve, and so that was the opportunity to really sit down and poke into the areas that we were most interested in. And, you know, it's a little bit of a vanity thing, I guess, that I sat down with the governor, you know, whatever. But, you know, the governor's office wanted to do it all at once. They wanted to avoid any sort of issues of embargoing, you know, where the governor sat down with the print reporters one day and they got a story and we got mad in the broadcast arena because we didn't get the story the same day. I can understand that, but it was a strange way to do it.
And most of our listeners and readers really don't care about reporters. They may think of them less
highly. We're
right
up there with, but down there with.
Whatever. Governor Kasich came to the event with the attitude that reporters had missed the big stories of this year by concentrating on Issue 2, Senate Bill 5, and he said that no one had ever done what he had done, words to that effect. There had never been, and that none of us thought he could do this. I think Governor Kasich likes to operate that way sometimes, him against the world. And he is a very hard worker. He has competent people surrounding him, but he seems to have kind of a chip on his shoulder sometimes when it comes to dealing
That was evident, too, at the news conference. There were several shots at individual reporters, including our Bill Cohen.
Cohen, I couldn't believe that one.
What was that about? He just, for no apparent reason, singled Bill out.
Well, and he has had his beefs with certain reporters throughout the year and has kind of
asking questions.
Yeah, and we kind of made him running jokes in a way. Mm. Kind of a George W. Bush style where, you know, he'd call out a certain reporter for saying something or whatever. He throughout this news conference, there were these little jabs about how you missed the story, you missed what we were talking about. If this had gone a different way, you'd be hammering me for this, so I want to take credit for this, like specifically on jobless numbers and how the unemployment rate has dropped. You know, so there was a real feeling like he wanted to be in control and get his message across rather than have us controlling the process and controlling the interview.
But there was at the same time Governor Kasich was having that press conference, and I would say there's Ohioans almost elected two governors, Governor Kasich being Kasich, and then there was the kinder and gentler Kasich, because at the same time, the social welfare people were sending him letters thanking him for what he had done. He'd given $2 million to food banks.
And right after that, he did a speech where he talked about the idea of drug testing, people who apply for cash assistance. He was against that. So, yeah, there's this kind of tale of two governors, so to speak.
I'm so riveted. I missed my break, but we can catch up. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Showtime series Californication begins its new season this weekend. On The Next Fresh Air, we talk with one of the show's stars, Pamela Adlon. She's also played a recurring character on Louis C.K.'s series Louis. She was the voice of the 12-year-old boy, Bobby Hill, on King of the Hill, and has done the voices for lots of other animated characters. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon on 89.7 NPR News. You can help shorten our upcoming winter membership drive. Become a sustaining member right now. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we'll eliminate one day from our membership drive. Right now, you can help take one day off of the drive. Visit WOSU.org and make your sustaining gift today.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
And be sure to tune in for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow morning at 11, Diversity in Central Ohio's Public Schools. The president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League will be joining the show. That's All Sides tomorrow at 11. Partly sunny skies this afternoon, a high of 34 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 26. Sunshine for Thursday, and a high of 41. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guests, Bill Hershey, veteran State House reporter, and also Karen Kassler, bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. We're talking about state politics now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org. And we've learned now, according to Politico, Michelle Bachmann can still run for her House seat if she wants it. So.
And if you're on Twitter and you follow Mike Thompson, the news director of WOSU, mm-hmm. he has tweeted out an explanation on why candidates suspend their campaigns, why they make that decision rather than dropping out.
And it's to, of course, raise money,
as
we mentioned earlier. So back to John Kasich, let's talk about the past year, what, he's more or less, he's done he's done a lot of the stuff he said he wanted to do. He tried to do it.
And he had a friendly legislature working with him.
Absolutely.
That really helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. I think that Karen made a good point, and I'm not sure it makes a difference to people, but Governor Kasich patted himself and the legislature on the back for doing all they had done, and they did many things. But he had a majority in the Ohio Senate, 23-10, in the Ohio House, 59-40. The last time the Democrats controlled everything in state government was Governor Celeste's first term. They had a one-vote majority in the Senate, 17-16. They had to bring a man, a Senator Ocasek, back from Florida just to pass legislation on a party line. And that's nothing like what Kasich had this, Governor Kasich had. I think that many of the legislators would have liked to have gone further than Governor Kasich did on some issues, and he may have curbed some of their enthusiasm, actually.
You know, even though back in the late 80s, early 90s, when the Republicans controlled the Senate, there was still, you got a lot more done in some ways back then when they were divided that way. They talked more.
That was when Vern Stanley Reif Aronoff was Speaker and Aronoff was Senate President, right. And those were people who knew how to work the system. They did know how to go across party lines and work, and it was different.
Maybe we'll never see it again. So let's talk about what's coming up. It was news to me. I guess I somehow missed it, but Ohio Right to Life, the executive director for the Ohio Right to Life has resigned.
Yeah, that was Friday. So,
that was Friday. Okay,
yeah,
well,
that's
there
it's
you
easy
go.
To miss on a holiday weekend. He
break.
Didn't resign. I mean, he resigned, but he resigned. He's taking a new position. Actually, I'm interviewing him tomorrow for our TV show, having a discussion with him and the ACLU about the lawsuit that the ACLU has filed over the bill that would ban abortion coverage in the state's health insurance mm-hmm. marketplace, and I plan to ask
which
Mike
has
Gunnar,
been enacted, right?
Right,
yeah,
it has.
That's when
the
governor
ACLU
just signed
suing
it, right.
over it. Interestingly enough, the ACLU is partnering. They're using Issue 3, the Tea Party mm-hmm. Amendment. They're using that to try to overturn this law. So it's an interesting melange of
it's
political
Mike,
points
Mike
of view.
Mike Gunnadakis.
He's now the president of Ohio Right to Life, rather than the executive director. So he's still in the organization, but I think he's out of the line of sight, so to speak.
He had become a lightning rod for criticism for those who supported the heartbeat bill, which is still stuck in the Ohio Senate.
Is that going to go anywhere?
I don't know if it's going to go anywhere or not, because Senate President Niehaus, some of his associates were clearly peeved at what happened at the end of the session, where the supporters of the heartbeat bill submitted changes to it, after having told Senator Niehaus that the bill was vetted well in the House. But they countered by saying, well, the Senator Niehaus's ally said they wanted us to make some of these changes. But so in a way, it was convenient for Senator Niehaus. I'm not sure the Senate leadership wanted to move ahead with it.
And but if they didn't, they probably wished it was the second year of the session instead of the first year of the session.
They probably did. Some of the senators would probably like to have an informed consent heartbeat bill, which is what's happening at the national level, and that would mean that a woman who's seeking abortion would have to be told that a heartbeat was detected. She would have to be informed, but it would not be a ban. This will not satisfy the supporters of the heartbeat bill.
And so what does it mean, though? And it felt like another issue that concerned the Republicans in the Senate was the splintering of the pro-life movement in Ohio. You're not going to satisfy one or the other. They wanted them to get together.
Right. And it's because the heartbeat bill backers had backed this measure that Right to Life's board of directors had voted that was probably not going to be held constitutional, and it's not the right time for that bill. At least that was the attitude. And so, you know, now you've got the heartbeat bill's backers have formed their own political action committee. They're taking, kind of stripping away local Right to Life chapters, and it's really now a financial assault. And I kind of said that in a year-end piece that I did that's, you know, this was clearly an effort to try to go after the money that's in the anti-abortion community.
Because they're going to need it.
Right. And so, you know, what now remains is whether Ohio Right to Life, where they stand, and you know, if the heartbeat bill doesn't go anywhere, what do the heartbeat bill backers then do? Do they go looking at other states? I mean, certainly the folks who are Ohio-based are frustrated. And so I don't know what happens with those people if indeed the heartbeat bill doesn't go anywhere.
Moving on, AP reports that Indiana is taking up right-to-work legislation, and the question is, will Ohio lawmakers / Governor Kasich go beyond that effort already started to gather signatures in Ohio, I think.
These are the Tea Party folks that brought you Issue 3.
Right, and I'm wondering if we could put that in the context of Senate Bill 5/Issue 2. There was talk right away that they would deconstruct Senate Bill 5 and bring back elements of it. Do you think they might come back in the form of a right-to-work legislation or not?
I specifically asked Senate President Niehaus when he was on our TV show, The State of Ohio, before Christmas, if indeed that was the plan. The plan was to bring back some elements of Senate Bill 5. He told me then that there were not. That was then. I don't know. I don't think right to work is something that a lot of lawmakers are real thrilled about right now. I mean,
well, it's real anti-union, right?
It affects private unions, which are not as big a part of the labor movement as they used to be. But I think if you listen to Governor Kasich's year-end press conference, he didn't sound like a man who would support right to work legislation. He said several times that people have spoken, or words to that effect. And while he might, in his heart of hearts, support right to work, maybe other Republicans do too, I'm not sure they want to try it this quickly. And Ohio and Indiana are neighbors, but the political demographics are very different between the two states.
And I think you've got the unions that are just coming off the issue to win for them, the defeat of Senate Bill 5. And I talked to the AFL-CIO president, Joe Rigola, who said, yeah, bring it on. He would love to engage in that battle because they feel like that would, once again, get
they
union
still have
voters.
All their mailing lists, all their email lists, all their...
And this is an election year anyway where they're hoping to bring out voters for Barack Obama. So, you know, that's I don't know what's going to happen with that Tea Party backed amendment that they're in the gathering stages.
They have said that they may not have it ready for the 2012 ballot, that it might be for 2013, but I think that they will continue their efforts.
Is it not ready, or are they being pressured to not have it ready?
It could be a combination, but it takes a long time to get those signatures. If you remember, the Issue 3 signature campaign, I think, took 36 months or something like that. And Ann referred earlier to the tortoise of Mitt Romney. These Tea Party people, they have their eye on the prize, and the prize is getting that on the ballot. And I'm not sure they care so much about 2012 as they do about the issue, because many of them are not Republicans or Democrats in the classic sense.
They don't aren't beholden to anybody.
No, not to either party.
Well, I think that's why you're seeing some Tea Party groups in Ohio, rather than backing candidates, doing these sort
issues.
Of policy issue-related stuff. Because, like you said, you're drawing from different sides of the political spectrum in some cases.
So, what is on the table for they're going to have a capital budget, right? That they're going to have to deal
with. Small capital budget.
Yeah.
There won't be any community projects. Governor Kasich and Tim Kaine has said because there's not the money. They don't want to incur the debt. So I think that's coming out. Is it February or March? I'm not sure just when.
They're talking about, I think this was in the governor's year-end press conference, about when it comes to funding for the colleges and universities, state colleges and universities, they're going to have to get together and prioritize together, I guess, at the Board of Regents level, I'd imagine. But how would that work?
That's a good question. I know he said in the year-ender that it was
they have lobbyists.
It was going to be a skinny capital budget.
Right.
There wasn't going to be really any money for community projects, and he wanted the university system to work as a system, not as a system of universities.
Right.
Who said that first? Wasn't that a former governor?
I think, would that be Voinovich?
No, that was Strickland.
Strickland set up the university system of Ohio.
They were talking about looking at, I think it was back during Voinovich when they were cutting out programs. At the Board of Regent level,
But I know that there are some folks that have questions about how colleges and universities spend money and, you know, these huge, massive capital campaign projects that are really, really expensive and, you know, tuition going up. And there's all these sorts of questions about that. And I think, you know, Governor Kasich's trying to tap into a little bit of that by saying, hey, I want colleges and universities to get together and share services and talk about how they can use the limited resources we have more effectively.
Okay, so what about exotic animals, puppy mills, all those kind of things that Ohio tends to not want to deal with very quickly? Puppy mills have been on, talk about a tortoise issue. It's been around forever.
I think Senator Haidt that said that he thinks he may have a compromise, but...
On the puppy mill or exotics?
Puppy mills.
Okay.
But people have said they might have a compromise on that issue for a long, long time. I think the exotic animals, something will happen with that. I think the governor is committed to making something happen there.
They're going to have to find a puppy mill in the basement of a church before they do anything about that. Uh-huh. I mean, in other words, it took this debacle of the exotic animals being let loose to...
Well, and I'm wondering, too, how much we're going to see compared to 2011 in 2012, because it is an election year. The House is up for re-election. Half of the Senate is up for re-election. And so I'm just wondering how much, you know, of legislation that hasn't gone through in the past might actually get discussed because, you know, the representatives and senators are out campaigning. They're trying to keep their jobs.
They can't blame it on the Capitol bill, though, if it's going to be a skinny mini. What else is going on? What else should we look for?
I think that the big deal is jobs. And Governor Kasich has Jobs Ohio. It's up and running, and that I don't know that that will require any more legislation, but I think it's going to be very active.
It's being challenged, isn't it?
It is being challenged in lawsuits, but I think that it's still functioning.
And, you know, you've got what's going on in Northeast Ohio now with the earthquakes and the wastewater from the wells and, you know, the continued questions about fracking, which is, you know how that's going to affect. And you've got a tremendous amount of financial and capital invested in these wells and all this stuff that's going on in the shale deposits in eastern and, well, throughout Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to be a big issue. After the earthquake, there was one on Christmas Eve and one on New Year's Eve. Right. You've got a Democratic state senator from Youngstown who wants to have hearings.
Bob Hagan.
So, actually, no, Joe Schiavone.
But Hagan's
right
been,
up Bob Hagan's,
yeah, right.
Right up his alley.
Also, the governor did say no income tax cut.
He didn't,
or he didn't think
he didn't say
they'd
no
get to
for,
it.
Absolutely, but he didn't say there would be one either.
I think he's leaving that door maybe open. Because, I mean, at this point in time, when you're still trying to rebuild the rainy day fund, which some people have said would never be done again, you know, I think there's the idea of maybe we should hold back on anything else for another couple years. And, you know, the governor's not going to run for re-election if he does for another couple years. So there's that.
You know. It said the city of Columbus has, I think, $2.8 million extra dollars than they expected. It comes from the estate tax, which is going away.
Right.
So local governments are going to be hit pretty hard coming in the year after next.
And
year after this, I keep forgetting.
Right,
we're in 2012
right.
now.
And local governments, I mean, the last budget just whacked local governments. Right. And so, you know, it's kind of a new era for how local governments are going to do what they do. And, you know, whether we're going to see more tax levies and that kind of thing is, you know, still up in the air.
Also, the way the governor pulled some money out for food banks and that sort of thing, you mentioned that earlier on, Bill. How much of that is out there? How much loose change is out there that he can play with over the next year?
I don't know. I think that money came from the faith-based initiative fund, so I don't know how many little pockets of money there are like that. But that was one that he could tap into.
And I think, you know, it goes back into that idea that we were talking about, this two different governors kind of thing. And you know, people in the safety net advocacy community have really had nice words for mm-hmm. Governor Kasich and said that they didn't take the hits that they thought they were going to take. And so that's something that maybe, you know, in this marathon year-end press conference, he could have talked about a little bit more, because I think it got some of his message kind of got buried in with all the cabinet members standing up and here's a video and here's all this other stuff. It kind of got a little muddled.
He did talk about health care in that press conference, and that would probably have been worth a press conference of his own because of the changes they've made to Medicaid,
right.
Systematic reforms, making the whole person better mentally, physically, and I think that's something that the governor's received praise for.
And we'll probably be talking about that coming up. I want to thank you, Karen Kassler, for joining us again today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here. Happy New Year.
Karen is Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and also Bill Hersey, veteran Statehouse reporter. Thanks for joining us, Bill Hersey.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Mm-hmm.